Many Roads to Japan, A Search for Identity, by Robert W. Norris. Chapter 4. The flight took 14 hours, stopping once in Iceland to refuel. At last the plane touched down in Luxembourg. John was on foreign soil for the first time in his life. After passing through customs, he walked around the fortress city. The medieval architecture and narrow cobble streets were pleasing to his eyes, as were the wooded hills and green landscape that surrounded the city. He was anxious, however, to be moving, to begin the adventure, so he boarded a train to Brussels, Belgium. He found a compartment to himself where he could be alone and think. In Brussels, he took a midnight train bound for Paris. The night was long, with scattered periods of sleep. Early in the morning, the train arrived at the Gare du Nord. A heavy mist covered the city. John searched for 3 hours before finding a cheap room on the left bank. Fatigued from jet lag and walking, he passed out on his bed and slept for nearly 18 hours. For the next 2 days he walked the streets of Paris and watched the frenzied movement of tourists and natives alike. High cirrus streamlined an azure sky. Flowers were blooming. The trees in the parks were dressing themselves in green. The fragrance of spring was everywhere. Lovers walked arm in arm. Children bounded to and fro, ignoring their parents' admonitions. He was surrounded by activity and scores of people. For some reason, Paris intimidated John. He was not comfortable and felt the need to retreat from all the confusion to a quiet place where he could reflect on why he was in Europe, what he should do, and where he should go. He decided to head toward Switzerland, to the Alps, where he could camp out and allow the changes he was undergoing to occur uninterrupted. He journeyed first to the foot of the Matterhorn in the Swiss Alps. For 3 days he dwelled in solitude. Not since his childhood in the redwoods had he felt so close to nature, to the trees and mountains and earth surrounding him, to the inestimable sadness of life and its transience. On the third day, as he sat staring at the Matterhorn, a shadow of loneliness fell upon him. The inner journey, the search for a faith, for a belief in life, manifested itself once again in physical movement. He hiked down the mountain road to the village of Visp and boarded a train to Italy. He found himself in Florence, wandering through the city, barely conscious of the history surrounding him. He passed through the Uffizi and was attracted to Botticelli's paintings. John had the feeling that surely Botticelli's had been a mystic soul possessed by the demon of intellect and condemned to a restless existence. He wondered if his own life would continue in the same restless manner, if he would always feel he should be someplace other than where he was. At the Michelangelo Academy he discovered in The David an answer to the problem that has tortured mankind throughout the ages, the inevitability of death. In the David, John found preserved for eternity a moment of poignant thought, of tender expression, of profound emotion. What men these Botticellis, these Da Vincis, these Dantes had been! What purpose of mind they had possessed! Perhaps art was the road to salvation, John thought. Perhaps art could liberate the soul from the pain of living. John left Florence and lived for 2 days on the trains, getting off only to buy bread and wine. One night he stopped in Naples and found an abandoned construction site in which to sleep. Several times during the night he awoke to the sound of rats scurrying around him. He boarded a southbound train early the next morning. The compartments were crowded, so he had to try to sleep on the floor of the narrow corridors. He rode the train ferry that crossed the strait between the mainland and Sicily. Only a few peasants rode the train from Messina. About half the distance across the northern coast of Sicily, the train stopped at the fishing village of Cefalù. On an impulse, John got off. The sun was high in a cloudless sky. It was very warm. The village lay at the base of a large headland. The buildings were all old and made of adobe. The smell of salt and fish and sea filled the air. Long lines of laundry on many rooftops flapped in the breeze. Copper-skinned children ran laughing and shouting through the narrow, meandering streets. Many small skiffs were docked in the harbor, where weather-beaten men patiently mended their nets. A castle rested on a hill overlooking the village. Nearby was an old cathedral. John walked along the long stretch of beach outside the village for about a mile until he found a comfortable, isolated spot to set up camp. The white sand shimmered under the hot sun. He washed his clothes and hung them to dry on a tree. For most of the next 2 days, he lay on the beach and watched the fishermen in dinghies gather in their nets. It was a peaceful time, and the United States seemed far away. On the third day, John packed his things and walked back into the village. He boarded the first train back to Messina, settled in an empty compartment, not knowing where to go next, and contemplated his future as the poverty-stricken countryside flashed by the window. John headed up the western coast of Italy. In Paola, he boarded a train inland to the mountains. The train chugged up a steep incline until the ocean was far below. The sun was a dazzling brilliance on the water as the train rounded the final bend to wind its course toward the heel of the boot of Italy. The country was green and fresh, with many beech and pine trees. In the village of Cosenza, he waited a few hours before catching another train. The next evening he was in Brindisi, a southern Italian port town, boarding a ferry to the Greek island of Corfu, off the coast of Albania. The following morning, the ferry approached the island. The sun was just above the calm sea. The town of Corfu was bleached in the morning light. Low mountains rose jaggedly in the distance. Once on land, John exchanged some money, then set out to explore the streets of the town before hopping a bus into the countryside. He joined a group of travelers at a camping site a few miles north of the town. It was a peaceful place across the road from a stretch of white beach. There was plenty of shade provided by a grove of olive trees. Most of the other campers were young people, Germans, Scandinavians, Canadians, French, Dutch. The days on the island were tranquil days of lounging around and lying nude on a ledge of rock by the sea. The outside world ceased to exist. In the evening, small groups gathered at a nearby cantina for suppers of souvlaki, cucumber salad, and potatoes cooked in olive oil. Everyone drank ouzo, the potent Greek wine. The local patrons, warm and friendly people who had lived their entire lives on the island, danced to the music of a jukebox. There was much laughter, handshaking, and toasting of drinks. Afterward, the travelers returned to the camping site to gather around a fire, pass bottles of ouzo, and watch the stars. The conversation was animated. It covered many topics in many languages: voyages to other lands, politics, music, art, literature, philosophy. John had never seen such a gathering before. Poets, musicians, painters, political dissidents, refugees, everyone seemed involved in something important and meaningful. Their lives seemed fulfilled and exciting. John had suddenly found himself in the midst of an international underground group with its own grapevine of information, its own lifestyle that enabled all to travel in an inexpensive manner to many countries, exchanging cultures, knowledge, and love. He envied the zest and capacity for life these people had. When it came his turn to speak, John told of his experiences as a conscientious objector and his life in military prison. He was baffled by the response of the others. There was an admiration for what he had done, for the courage of his convictions. The others listened respectfully and offered encouragement and advice. He was flooded with names and addresses in many countries, offers to stay should he happen to visit. He was given books to read. He no longer felt the outcast, the pariah, the fugitive. He bathed luxuriously in this much-needed boost to his ego. A woman entered his life. Her name was Krita, a lovely Norwegian with soft blue eyes, a radiant smile, and long, flowing blonde hair. She was an artist who had just come to Corfu from Spain. Her lust for life was infectious. Her uninhibited approach to life made a great impression on John. The image she created of the world as she had experienced it was rich with romance, vibrant with life, alluring in its potential for adventure. She excited him most when she talked about Spain. "You must visit Spain by all means if you are traveling in Europe. Your education will not be complete, my American lover, without the experience. It is so different from, yet so representative of, Europe. If you wish to understand life, then you must see Spain," she said. "Spain is the true melting pot of culture, not your America with its machines of destruction and arrogant populace so much like spoiled children. And Spain's artists, her Picassos, her Dalis, her Goyas, her Velasquezes, her one and only El Greco, who was really a Cretan, but found refuge and a source of inspiration among the people of Spain. You, too, may find inspiration there to explore the confusion in your heart. You have an artistic soul. Perhaps there is a writer or painter hidden away in you somewhere. I implore you to go to Spain." John spent the next week with Krita, swimming and laughing, sunbathing and drinking, learning about the world of art. It was a time of broadening his perspectives, of dreaming and thinking and reading. But soon the wanderlust was upon him again. He left Corfu early one morning after having spent 3 weeks on the island. The sky was filled with gray clouds, strands of dawnlight sifting down through them. Far away on the water, a freighter moved along peacefully. Seated on the edge of the road next to the beach, a Greek boy watched the freighter's steady movement. John kissed Krita goodbye, hoisted his backpack, hitched a ride into town, and bought a bus ticket to Athens.